Welcome to Future Proof, the marketing podcast from Kantar and Side Business School, University of Oxford. In each episode, we speak with marketing leaders and share insights to help brands and business leaders navigate the ever-changing marketing landscape and hopefully dispel some myths and misconceptions along the way. Hi, I'm Jane Osler, EVP.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Of global thought leadership at Kantar.
So our guest today is Leslie Salem, who is founder of Over the Bloody Moon. And first of all, Leslie, tell us about what Over the Bloody Moon is and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jane, for having me on the show today. So Over the Bloody Moon is a collective of menopause specialists that go into organisations and provide support for managers and all employees around menopause, so to educate and to provide training and also learning resources. So we're on a mission to remove the muddle from menopause, and particularly in the workplace, remove the taboo and stigma that is, you know, very much still, unfortunately, around.
And tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background, Leslie? How did you arrive where you are today?
So my background actually is branding and innovation and market research. So familiar to Kantar. About 4 years ago, I really wasn't feeling myself. And unfortunately, it sort of, you know, these were all classic perimenopausal symptoms that were undiagnosed, and I was completely unprepared for menopause. And as a result of that, I left my work, and it was really that sort of whole experience that led me to feel very passionate about making sure that other people don't feel that they need to leave the workplace and can continue to thrive, because actually, had I have known what was going on, there were many different sort of, you know, options, and my interventions would have been a lot, you know, sooner. So that really was the inspiration for Over the Bloody Moon. But I, as a result of that, I retrained. I became a certified health coach specializing in menopause. And I also am a podcast hostess of my own show, The Changemakers. So I've had the privilege over the last few years of talking to many different global experts and authors around menopause. So that in itself has, you know, educated me on the topic.
So thank you. So apparently there are around 13 million perimenopausal or menopausal women in the UK, which is about a third of the entire UK female population. Now, I suppose with an ageing population, which we have in many markets, including many European markets as well, So is this an increasing issue? Do you see that as part of your mission? And there are more people who are potentially in need of your support and help?
Yeah, well, I mean, globally, if you look at globally, the stats, it's around 1 billion people will be going through menopause or impacted by 2025. So, you know, for brands and in terms of menopause support in the workplace, there's, you know, a hugely underserved need there. So, you know, absolutely, it's a trend that is, well, it's a meta trend. And there's a lot of work still that needs to be done to educate people and to make sure that they have early, you know, intervention and support.
And why is this, I use this word advisedly, why is this such a hot topic now? Why wasn't this happening 5 years ago or 8 years ago? There are lots of women who are now out the other side of the menopause who probably could have done with this help many years ago. So why is this all happening now, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Jane. I think societally, we are a quite different place to previous generations. So as you've just said, you know, never before have we had a workforce that is, you know, represented with quite the numbers in terms of people that are going through menopause or will at some point, you know, in their life. We economically are needing to work later into our careers, and particularly with the economic climate, you know, some people that are having to return to work as well to support, you know, their family. So, but I think, you know, what's different is, you know, I often hear, we run a community, by the way, on Facebook and Instagram. And so we hear people's stories all the time. And one of the most common things that I hear is, you know, my mum said that she sailed through it. And she's always, you know, saying, I don't understand what the big deal is. But I think the pressure that Gen X's and people that are going through menopause is very different to what potentially our mothers went through. So people, if they are having families, are starting to have those much later on, which means that they might be going through the early stages of, you know, perimenopause with young toddlers or babies, or even worse, teenagers, you know, the clashing of hormones. So you know, you've got family that you're looking after, potentially you've got elderly parents who are living longer with all the age you know, associated diseases, so they require more care, and then you've got work on top of that. So it's a real pressure point, alongside the fact of, for people that might be going through some changes and they're not joining the dots. They're suddenly thinking, I need to really, this is the time when I need to be operating at my absolute optimum, and I'm not able to, and I don't understand why. So this is kind of, you know, the main changes, I believe. And then just also the other thing in the UK, because we're really leading in this, in terms of advocacy, I think, you know, it's been the culmination of individual voices coming together, and it's come from lots of different spheres. So we've got politicians, we've got celebrities, we've got advocates, we've got people like me, and everybody, you know, is sharing their story, and that's really, really powerful.
So that's good. So you're capturing a zeitgeist, which I think is obviously just going to continue. And with the other thing that I wanted to talk about, I think, was some research that we did with you at Over the Bloody Moon, talking about actually understanding women who are sort of transitioning through this and identify what the opportunities are for brands. Now, in the research, it found that there's an average of 6 symptoms that any one woman might experience. So what are they? What are the symptoms? I mean, obviously, we've heard of hot flushes and, you know, maybe sleepless nights. But what are the key ones?
Yeah, just on language, I do try and use the words like the phrase possible impacts, because I do think symptoms, you know, medicalizes it. But you're absolutely right. We did end up in the research using that term because it's something that people understand. But the number one most the number one aspect that most impacts on people is disrupted sleep. And not surprisingly, because if you don't sleep, you feel rubbish the next day. And that, you know, long term can have an impact on your mental health, as well as triggering physical changes as well. The second and the third were hot flushes and night sweats, which most people sort of, you know, are aware of. But what was really interesting was not so far behind were the emotion, you know, the emotional side of mood swings and anxiety and stress, followed by brain fog and memory recall. So, but of course, there's no one size fits all. It's different for everybody. There are 48 associated possible, you know, impacts for people going through menopause that are recognized. And we know that because menopause is a transition, things come and go. So it's very dynamic. And I think it is important for brands not to just kind of, you know, latch on to anyone unless they have been very specific and creating things, you know, that are, you know, designed to provide specific solutions. So it's capturing the diversity of experience that's really important as well.
So there's a whole host of possible impacts, as you say, but presumably there's also quite a lot of myths and misconceptions or assumptions that people have about menopause. Are there some of those that you'd like to bust today?
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, people aren't always aware that there's stages. So, you know, many people haven't heard of that term perimenopause, which is can be on average for those going through it naturally around 7 years, where hormones are starting to drop and fluctuate. The medical definition of menopause is just one day, 365 days after a person's last period. But of course, it is a transition, and holding somebody's hand throughout that is really important. Other myths are that it is just, you know, hot flushes or your periods stop. So we know actually in perimenopause, the stage before menopause, it is the emotional side and the cognitive impact that is most significant for people. And I think also we often hear, don't we, Jane, of women of a certain age. But I hate that phrase, because it can happen. Menopause can happen at any time after a person's first period. So the youngest person in the UK is just 14. And particularly, you know, we extended our research to capture that diversity of experience. So we went down as young as the age of 30 and up to the age of 65 in this research. And what we found with the people that were going through surgical menopause or medically induced menopause have a much more severe experience. So understanding the nuances and the diversity of menopause experience is important. And I mean, our research interviewed women, but when we do when we do our presentations and our training, we really emphasize the importance as well of thinking about non-binary people and trans men. Anyone that is born with female sex characteristics, you know, will be impacted in menopause in their own way. And our research found also that, you know, people that are going through early menopause experience issues sometimes with friendships, in terms of, you know, they don't have that affinity and that peer group that are going through the same thing for them. Whereas people that are going through it surgically often felt they didn't have the support of the healthcare professionals, who were very focused on their primary condition. And then people going through it naturally were the ones that had the biggest impact in terms of, you know, sex life and relationships with it. That they were, you know, personal relationships. So everybody is different. And I think we have to get out of this, you know, homogenization when it comes to communication and innovation.
So let's then move on to talking about what brands can do or what they are or aren't doing. I mean, the study that we worked on, as you know, redefining the menopause, showed that I think 2/3 of women who were experiencing the menopause or perimenopause feel that brands aren't doing enough to support them. And just over 3/4 don't feel represented at all by brands advertising and marketing. So what can brands do? Do they have a role to play?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, they have a role to play because, you know, the research found that, you know, people were crying out for solutions. And, you know, whilst there is, you know, HRT and some general, you know, natural remedies to make people feel empowered, they want to have, you know, a broad set of tools to dip into. And that's, you know, very much gives a strong role for brands and products and services. So I think, you know, it's in terms of the opportunity for brands, it's really to be a trusted source of support, and also from a messaging or tonality perspective, also to be a friend. And we're seeing that with, you know, some of the new brands that are entering into the space, that the brands that are doing really well in this space, firstly, show that menopause, even though they show a realistic side to menopause, the ups and the downs, and the unexpectedness, they are overridingly really optimistic and positive in their communication. And I think that's really important for people that are going through menopause. They want to have hope and to hear stories of people maybe that have had challenges and gone through the other side and are now thriving. And I think, you know, the other aspect in terms of communication is to demonstrate support. And so brands that show sort of like tribes and sisterhood and community, such as Empowder, do really well. And I think in terms of people in the ads, it's really important to make sure that they're relatable, that they represent all cultures and heritages, people with disabilities as well as able people, and different ages, as we've mentioned already, that, you know, diversity of experience is really important. So and then in terms of endorsement, I think, you know, people are looking for expertise. They want to see clinical trials and science that are, you know, underpinned the product claims. But at the same time, you know, the people that endorse that, or the way that it's endorsed, should feel quite down to earth and lifestyle based, rather than too medical. So I think there's lots of, you know, good ways in which brands can connect with this audience.
Actually, it's interesting what you say about, you know, giving people sort of hope and optimism and sort of encouraging messages. Actually, we find that is common across many different areas of advertising or topics. So, for example, we know that sustainability, encouraging people's behaviour change and sustainability achieves better results if you approach it in a more hopeful and positive and optimistic way. And the other thing is, you know, let's not forget humour as well. Humour is one of the most powerful vehicles for advertising. And, you know, it's proven to have a stronger return on investment and better brand impact. And so I think there are a lot of opportunities there. I guess for brands who want to maybe de-risk that process, the sensible thing is possibly for them to make sure they do their creative testing, do some research to make sure they've got the tone right. But there are examples, you know, sort of healthcare and beauty brands like Pantene and Always Discreet, who are, you know, playing their part. I've also noticed a couple of brands fairly recently using.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
women sort of swimming in rivers and in open air swimming pools and that kind of thing, which might be a bit of a trope, but it's, you know, it's a good one. So I think there's lots of ways that brands can respond. Coming back to the point you made about negative impacts on feelings and mood, I think 67% reported that, which is very high. Do you think brands have a role to play in that? Do you think it's a brand's job to help women's self-confidence and make them feel good? Is that part of what they should do?
Absolutely. Listen, we buy products and brands, don't we? They're kind of because they fill the gaps that we need. And we know that that is, you know, a major aspect. We hear from our community women using language like, you know, I feel invisible. I no longer recognize myself. I just want to feel normal. And so anything that brands can do to, you know, bring that back to people is really important. I think one of the things that I was surprised about, we looked with this piece of research in the workplace, and 33% of people highlighted that the number one aspect that most bothered them in the workplace was their appearance, change in weight, skin, hair. And I was like, wow, do people really care? But maybe that's because I'm not very into grooming myself. But, you know, appearance does have a really important sort of aspect. And that is, for some people, it is part of that grieving process of you know, physically looking at the changes and finding that quite hard to reconcile. But I think, again, just going back to brand sort of tonality, you know, rather than use words like anti-aging, it's pro-aging. So, you know, never before has this generation, or, you know, particularly for this generation, you know, we are going to be living much longer, going through menopause and also post-menopausally. So 100 years ago, people only lived post-menopausal for 9 years, and now the average is 32 years.
So I want to talk about what Over the Bloody Moon is doing in the corporate space. I have obviously seen coverage recently of the anti-terror chief at the Met Police wearing a Menno vest. Has that caused some controversy for you?
Well, it definitely created debate, and I feel really I was quite upset about the Met Police, because I, you know, this was part of a 2-day event that we ran with them, and they are doing the most amazing things for inclusion and diversity. So I was, you know, I was disappointed that Matt Dukes got, you know, that it was called woke. You know, I mean, anything that is supporting people and addressing inequality in the workplace should never be associated with woke. So the Menno vest was designed because, you know, we've been in the workplace, corporate workplace, running workshops and training for the last few years. And I just felt that still men weren't that engaged. When we run workshops and we ask for people to come forward and volunteer for training, it was very much like, you know, the people that were going through menopause or were about to, or maybe just come through the other side. And still very underrepresented in terms of like that intersectional sense of allyship. So the Menno vest is designed specifically to get men involved in the conversation. And we've been absolutely blown away globally by, you know, the response of companies who have got CEOs and different senior leaders to wear it. And I know, you know, some of the controversy and is going to be, well, you know, perimenopause lasts for 7 years, or people can go through their transition for decades. Is it fair that someone wears it, you know, for an hour? But the point is that when you wear the Menno vest, it's not just hot flushes. People within, you know, sort of 5 minutes understand the impact that it has on confidence, anxiety. They report headaches, dizziness, nausea, brain fog, distraction, discomfort, all those things that our research showed, you know, that all these different aspects are interconnected, the physical, the cognitive and the psychological. And quite frankly, if that lands the point and creates change and suddenly people are talking about it more, you know, with their colleagues, investing more in menopause, then I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, well, it's certainly got some publicity, which is, you know, I think in many ways, that's a really positive awareness raising force. And so tell us about in the corporate space, one of the concepts you have is a menopause ally. What does a menopause ally do in a work context?
When we talk about menopause allyship, it can be for any, you know, community. But within menopause, when we talk about menopause allyship, we have coins like the A to E of menopause allyship. So these are really traits or behaviours that people can show that they're pro-menopause and help colleagues that are impacted by menopause to feel safe and protected. So, you know, A is for active listening. When somebody first shares what's going on for them, you know, that's a pretty big deal. There's a lot of emotion and fear and maybe embarrassment and shame around that. And one of the most powerful things that people can do is just to really be in the present and to listen. And that doesn't mean coming up with solutions or trying to fix things, but just to let that person be heard. And then right at the end, just sort of summarize how, you know, play back to them the emotional side rather than, you know, the detail and asking them how can they help. B is for being non-judgmental. So we can often listen to people and think, well, why haven't they done this or that? So if we suspend that, again, that just helps and understand, you know, culturally people are coming at this, you know, in a very unique way. And so, you know, again, just giving that space and recognition that people should be able to manage their menopause in different ways is important. C is for championing. So that is about giving, you know, sharing your own stories and sharing information and positive narrative that you're picking up maybe on LinkedIn or news articles around menopause that make normalize the conversation and the experience for people. So the more people hear about it and feel that they are being championed, the more they'll open up and share their stories. And then D is for being dependable. So particularly for managers, you know, listening to somebody, discussing with them what adjustments could be made in the workplace, perhaps putting in a risk assessment for that individual and an action plan and to keep reviewing that because, as we said, menopause is dynamic and will change. So to make sure that one follows up on the actions one has promised. And E is empathy. And that is about really cultivating a mindset of curiosity and interest in what that person might be going through, you know, challenging any biases and sort of, you know, putting yourself in their shoes.
So if we look at the horizon, let's think about what needs to happen in the next few years about the menopause. How do you see the future of your organisation? Is it that you start to help more and more corporates have a policy on menopause and how they deal with it? Are there any other sort of products and services that you'll be thinking of offering over the next few years?
Yeah, so we have a pretty broad range of services. So we have we're about to launch an accreditation process where we have a menopause friendly framework. And within that, there are different facets. So, you know, the first is about commitment, and that is from senior leaders in terms of strategy, action plans, and general advocacy for menopause. And then looking at processes and systems. So that is about policy, having risk assessment, thinking about every aspect in which menopause should be recorded. So that might be around, you know, having a drop-down menu for expenses or why people are leaving or taking absences. Then training is really critical. So, you know, we work with HR and people managers anybody really within an organization, and people don't have much time. So I think it's, you know, how do you kind of help people quickly be able to kind of cultivate ask those right questions and work and respond in a best practice. And then also in terms of networking and culture, that's kind of something very much that companies need to own. So I think, you know, in terms of like the horizon, and in many ways, I hope in 5 years, I'll sort of be out of business in some ways, because it will be so normalized, and companies, in the same way that they're looking at, you know, race as an agenda, you know, menopause will be another aspect of which policy, training, resources, support, you know, all of that, those aspects have been addressed. And therefore, the next generation of people going through menopause, you know, we'll just, it'll just be common practice. And we'll also start to see, you know, it's not just within the workplace. There's a huge amount of change that needs to happen societally in terms of healthcare provision, better healthcare provision, you know, more formal training for doctors, better intervention, more accessible interventions, more tailored, you know, HRT, that definitely, you know, so there needs to be a lot more investment in women's health and research as well around the implications of taking HRT versus not taking HRT and what that means for people's long-term health outcomes. So I think, you know, it's still 5-10 years, we're, you know, there's still going to be quite a big job to be done.
You've been listening to Future Proof from Kantar and Side Business School. For all episodes and more information, visit kantar.com or oxfordfutureofmarketing.com. If you enjoyed this, please leave us a rating and a review and subscribe on your favourite podcast app so you never miss an episode.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.